Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 64. My name is Karen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Kristen.
Hello!
I almost said my name's Kristen. I think I was thinking ahead. I was like...
Name's Kristen, me, yeah. Yes.
Got confused, forgot my name. Everything's fine.
It's post-Christmas. Everything's a blur.
Yeah. That, and we are recording these two episodes early in the week. Usually we record either like Friday or Sunday. We're recording on a Tuesday this week.
Yes.
And we're doing 64 and 65 back to back with no news.
Yep.
Because we're kind of taking a little bit of a mini break for like the New Year's post-Christmas season.
Karen's got some traveling to do, yeah. And it's just gonna, yeah, it'll be easier this way.
Yeah, so we didn't want to leave you guys without any content, but it's gonna be, hopefully, shorter episodes than usual.
Keeping our fingers crossed, because yeah. You never know, and if you look at these docs, they don't look any shorter, so yeah. We'll see what's gonna happen.
You know, we haven't gone under an hour yet, but maybe this week and next week, one of those
maybe
could be in the 50-minute range.
Might be in that area.
We'll see. And then, of course, when we come back, we will do a news catch-up episode. And there's one particular item on there that we'll definitely be talking about. So we'll have at least one thing to discuss. But right. I'm sure there'll be other news.
I'm by sure then. Too.
Yeah, definitely. As always, if you would like to contact us, do so at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. We are skipping our news and going straight into our discussion. This time around, we are looking forward to everything coming up in 2023 because we know there are going to be some major book releases. I'm sure we're going to get some big announcements and we'll speculate about what some of that could be. It's going to be really cool. And this was a little bit of a longer section than I thought it was going to be. There's quite a bit going on in 2023, which I feel like we knew, but when you see it laid out in front of you like this, you're like, oh, a lot is happening next year.
Yeah, I mean, Rick alone has more than we thought he was going to have. Right. And then when you get into the RRP authors, there's just so much. And we've got new authors joining next year, and we've got old authors kind of finishing up series, so there's a lot going on.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to preface this by saying I tried really hard to find everything that I could that's coming out in 2023. Some things don't have specific release dates yet, and other things might be announced that we have no idea of right now, and I might have missed something too. If I did miss something, please let us know because I want to make sure I'm keeping track of everything, but did the best I could, and there's still a lot to talk about, so I'm not super worried about it.
Yeah.
But let's start with Rick Riordan because he does have a couple of things coming up, and they're pretty big things.
Yeah.
They're going to be pretty cool.
Yeah.
First, and very soon, and the thing that I was kind of hinting at before, was that on January 10th, The Sword of Hades is getting a re-release. It got a new cover, which looks pretty cool, and it's being sold for $1.99 on Amazon right now. You can pre-order it, and it will have a The Sun and the Star sneak peek, which is really the big thing there. You know, we've talked about The Sword of Hades before. It's the one where Persephone summons Nico, Talia, and Percy to the underworld, and, you know, shenanigans ensue.
But, as per usual.
Yeah, but it does lay the groundwork for what happens in The Sun and the Star, so it's smart that they're pairing these two together. And, of course, you know, money-wise, they're going to be able to get a couple of books. I pre-ordered it. It's not like I'm sitting on a high horse. Like, I definitely bought it. So when that releases, when we do our news, we'll discuss the Sun and the Star sneak peek. And it'll be very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited for it. And then, of course, on May 2nd, The Sun and the Star is coming out, a Nico D'Angelo adventure. Basically, you know, we know this already, but Nico and Will go to Tartarus in search of Bob. And I wrote an article. Did I mention this on the podcast before?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either, but I did write an article on subjectifymedia.com called Everything We Know About the Sun and the Star by Rick Riordan and Mark Ishiro, and it basically talks about everything that we know from the short story, everything we know from the Tower of Nero, where the prophecy is set up, and that is kind of what kickstarts this adventure. And then I have some speculation as well as to what could be happening. And I did quite a bit of research for this. This is not a short article. And I feel like I came up with some pretty good theories and found some information that I wasn't aware of before. So if you guys are interested in that and you kind of want to guess to see what happens or just to see if I'm right in any of my guesses, give that a read. I will link to it in the show notes and then we can revisit it when we actually get our hands on the Sun and the Star.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other big Rick Riordan announcement for 2023 is Chalice of the Gods. This releases on September 26th, so we have to wait a little while for that. But two book releases from Rick is pretty good. It's been a while since we've had that. It was pretty much the Heroes of Olympus series. And, well, I guess Heroes of Olympus plus the Kane Chronicles, and I think Magnus Chase was coming out.
I was going to say, didn't Magnus in Trials of Apollo?
Apollo, yeah. I think just a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I love getting two books from Rick in a year. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
And Chalice of the Gods is when Percy has to help Ganymede so he can get into New Rome University. He needs to get those letters of recommendation, and
that's the one that the one that was announced fairly recently that we talked about, but that's the one that kind of fits into the existing timeline. Like,
right.
Percy, it's
after Heroes of Olympus, but before Trials.
Trials of Apollo. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's with the original trio. It's a Percy Annabeth Grover story. So, yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. And like we said before, you know, he said this was a standalone book, but he needs three recommendations. So I don't know if he already has the other two and this is the third one, or, you know, if there's going to be, it's going to set up for maybe a sequel or something like that. As of right now, this is a singular book, but never say never when it comes to Rick Riordan.
We're just going to cross our fingers and hope that somehow this means we're getting three books.
And he has said if this one does well, there could be more. I don't know if that means other standalones set during different times, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Out of these three things, which are you most excited for?
I mean, it's hard not to be really excited about the Sun.
Yeah, I was gonna say that too.
Like, I mean, I'm really excited about Chalice of the Gods because
it sounds cool.
It's gonna be so much fun to be back with Percy, Annabeth, and Grover. Like, we haven't. Parts of this chapter, or the chapter we'll be discussing later, gets you back to Percy, Annabeth, and Grover, and it's like, you know, you forget that, you know, this series started with the three of them, and by the time you get to the last book, you've gone on adventures with Percy and Annabeth, and Percy and Annabeth and Talia, and then you have Clarice that gets thrown in there, but, like, it's hard to remember that Grover is the initial, you know, like, sometimes you forget, and there's some moments in The Last Olympian that we'll talk about today that kind of bring you back to that. So getting another book with the three of them as, like, the heart of it is really exciting. So, I think it's Sun and the Star, but it just barely ekes out Chalice of the Gods. And maybe it's because it comes out a little earlier.
Maybe
it's because it's like, but I really want to read this book.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I completely agree with that, and I think everything that we've been seeing from Nico in these last few chapters reminds me why I love him so much, and I think that in and of itself is getting me really excited for The Sun and the Star, because I'm like, Nico is a fantastic character. Yeah. He's so interesting. One of the best characters that Rick Riordan has written, and he's written a lot of characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's from the original series, like, that's pretty good when you establish such a great character early on in the canon. And
I mean, he makes his first official appearance in, what, book three?
Yeah, Titan's Curse,
yeah. So it's like, he's been around for a long time.
Yeah, he has. And, you know, he's gotten his time to shine a few times in the past, especially with Heroes of Olympus. He had his own chapters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But The Sun and the Star is going to be a whole different
beast. This is different. Yeah. Very different.
It's very exciting. The other thing that I'm really excited about this year is the Rick Riordan Presents books, because we have a lot coming out this year. Yes. A couple that I actually forgot were supposed to come out this year, and I just... We always have trouble keeping up with these books because...
There's just so many.
Yeah, we can only do so much, and, like, we both have a lot of other things that we're trying to do, and just keeping up with our regular reading for the podcast, let alone the Rick Riordan Presents stuff, is really difficult, but... That being said, the books are always so good like, it's not like it's a chore to read them. It's just like, okay, when can I schedule time to get them done?
Agreed.
Yeah. And the first one that comes out in 2023 is coming out fairly soon. It's February 7th. This is Winston Chu versus the Whimsies by Stacy Lee. It is about Chinese mythology, and it follows Winston Chu, who inadvertently stops a robbery at an oddity shop in Chinatown, is invited to choose any item in the store as reward, and of course, chaos ensues.
As you would expect.
Yeah, I think that's literally probably like the opening chapter or something, is that happens, and then just shenanigans happen after that.
And this is a debut... Rick Riordan Presents novel. We don't have... Stacy Lee has not previously published under RRP, so...
Correct.
This will be fun to... Yeah.
And I don't think this is a standalone, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
I feel like it might be part of a series, but we will...
Have to read the first one and...
Yeah, and also, there have been standalones that turned into series anyway.
Right,
so
Or at least duologies.
There's another book. I think Rebecca Roanhorse's one is the only one at this point that's been a complete standalone.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Everybody else was like,
I'll do more.
I can write another one.
Yeah. Speaking of sequels, I mean, we always knew this was going to have a sequel, but May 16th, so this is pretty soon after The Sun and the Star, May 16th, Last Canto of the Dead by Daniel Jose Older comes out. This is the sequel to Ballad and Dagger, the Outlaw Saints number 2 book, which, you know, we really enjoyed Ballad and Dagger.
Yes, we did.
It was the first young adult book coming out of Rick Riordan Presents. Not the only at this point,
right,
which is good. We've gotten another one coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And this one follows Mateo and Chela as they arrive on that island we see at the end of book 1. And I remember with our interview with Daniel, he says it picks up 1 second after the first book ends. And, you know... I guess spoilers a little bit, but, like, I'll keep it light. The things that come to light, the information that we learn at the end of that book is very significant, and that will really drive the story into the second book, so...
Yes.
I'm actually really excited about this one, too, and that title, Last
Canto... It's a good title.
Canto means song, I don't know. Okay, you did know
and
that.
And Canto.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, so that one should be pretty cool, and... I can't wait to read it.
Yeah.
As with most things on here. And speaking of, can't wait to read it.
Yes.
We have The Last Fallen Realm by Gracie Kim coming out on June 6th. This is The Gifted Clan's number 3 book, and it is the final book in the trilogy. So,
we have read the first one.
Yes.
You have read the second one.
You haven't read the second one.
I have not read the second one, so I need to work on
it. You gotta catch up, because it's so good, and...
I feel like this one might be a possibility. Like, with all the other... Because we've got the one in February, and then we don't have anything until Sun and the Star in May. So I'm hoping maybe somewhere in between there I can read Gifted Clans book 2 so that I'm ready for book 3 in June.
Yeah, because The Last Fallen Realm, I feel like... Everything, she's done a really good job of building up to, like, what ultimately happens in the third book, and it feels like it's gonna be a bigger story, you know, because it is the final, but, like, it says here that in the book, Riley must fight the cave bear goddess's sisters in their own realm in order to save her world and everyone she loves. So, like, going to, that's what it means by The Last Fallen Realm, going to the realm of the gods, like, that's always really interesting and really unique. And in the official synopsis, there were hints as to, like, I think it said, like, moon bunnies and, like, something about gummy... Some sort of food thing, like candy, enchanted gummies or something like that. I don't know. But it sounded really cool, and that book is just so vibrant in my head, all of the stuff that they get to do. So I'm super pumped about that.
That'll be a fun one.
Yeah. September's going to be busy because, again, we have Chalice of the Gods coming out, but we also have two Rick Riordan Presents books coming out.
Well, it looks like three.
Oh, you're right. Three. I had to scroll down a little bit more.
I was like, wait, I know I saw a third one earlier. Yeah.
Kristen, there's going to be four book releases in September. They're taken every week in September.
Yeah.
What are you doing to us?
We're gonna figure it out.
Yeah.
It's gonna be all right.
Especially because this is really tough because I feel very closely to each one of these for different reasons. So the first one is September 5th. The Spirit Glass comes out. That is, of course, by Rashmi Chokshi, who, you know, we gushed about last week on that episode. She's so fantastic.
Is this a new series or is this a standalone?
I believe this is a standalone.
Okay, I thought so too, yeah. But I wanted to
check. And instead of doing Hindu mythology, this is about Filipino mythology, the other part of her culture. And an orphan girl descended from Babaylans, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, mystical healers and spirit guides who, upon her 11th birthday, must learn to harness her powers in order to bring her ghost parents back to life.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And might be a little spooky, which I wouldn't mind too much. And we talked about this when they first announced it. Filipino mythology, don't really know much about it.
No.
So yeah, that's going to be really new for us. But, of course, her writing is gorgeous. And I'm just, you know, she can write anything. I'll read it. That's totally fine.
This is perfectly timed. I mean, coming out at the beginning of September, that means by the time you get closer to Halloween or like get into October, it'll be out for a minute, so like hopefully maybe we can do something like that for Halloween next year, because
that's true,
it would be a good title for that. Yeah, even if we have to save it just a little bit.
That's true. To do, you're gonna make me wait.
No,
come on, Kristen,
we'll figure it out.
I'll read it when I can.
Exactly, you can read it when it comes out.
Yeah,
and we'll
So, the following week, on September 12th, we have Sarah Boateng's Guide to Witchcraft and Mayhem by Roseanne A. Brown. This is, of course, the second book in this series. And as of right now, this is the final, but like she said when we talked to her, there's a high chance there could be more, and she's definitely willing to write more, so this was probably not going to be the last time we see Sarah, which is pretty exciting.
Right.
Yeah.
It better not be.
Yeah. In this one, Sarah helps her aunt go on the hunt for the Midnight Drum and stage a heist to steal it from the Smithsonian Museum of African Art in Washington, D.C., while also facing off against her rival, Declan Amenkwa. So,
I mean,
pretty interesting. I think it's cool going to the museum. Feels a little bit like,
well, and the whole mystery of the Midnight Drum thing kind of starts in the first book, right? And you wonder what's going on with this Midnight Drum. So to get some real answers and like really see what's going on with it will be fun.
Yeah. And we get hints as to Declan in the face and the fact that Sarah considers him her rival and everything. And I think there's a little more going on there. Roseanne hinted at maybe some, you know, romancy type of stuff, that kind of rivalry, which is always very fun to read about.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that this would be really cool. And just them being at the museum, I think that's really cool. It gives me, like, not quite Night at the Museum vibes, because we don't know exactly what's going to happen there, but just, you know, in a museum at night, you're not supposed to be there, things are happening.
Right.
And I love heist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Heist stories are always fun.
Oh, yeah.
The same day that Chalice of the Gods comes out, we get Fury of the Dragon Goddess by Sarwat Chadha. This is September 26th. We have not read City of the Plague God.
We have not.
But I love Sarwat. He's so funny. And I just, like, he's a massive nerd. I'm pretty sure Warhammer, those are the figures that he paints, along with Henry Cavill.
Yes.
And I just think that's cool.
Yeah.
But he's really funny, and every time I've seen him do, like, a live stream or talk with Rick or the other authors, he just makes me laugh so much. So I'm like, I need to read City of the Plague God, and then we could read Fury of the Dragon Goddess. This the synopsis kind of says, while on vacation in London, Sikandar Aziz gets his hands on the mythic Tablet of Destinies and uses it to bring his brother back to life. His wish is granted at a terrible cost, and his troubles multiply when the tablet is stolen by the elder god of insanity, Lugal, who brings back Tiamat, the great chaos dragon and mother of all monsters. I've heard that name before.
Yeah, I have too. And I'm not sure where.
Yeah.
But I've heard of Tiamat.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's, like, I don't know if it maybe is from another RRP book that, like, they mention it, like, in passing, or if it's from, like, a Marvel movie or something.
I feel like, I was thinking, like, superhero or some sort of movie.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that, but, yeah, that's gonna be hard to figure out. Just putting Tiamat in there is not gonna do anything, but...
Yeah, it's gonna be complicated. Yeah,
if anybody thinks of it, if they know what we're grasping at here, let us know, because...
Please.
Yeah, that sounds really familiar. But, I mean, that sounds interesting, and going up against an elder god, and not only an elder god, but the elder god of insanity...
Yeah, that's pretty... It's pretty interesting.
That's gonna be tough, and I'm pretty sure Sikandar is, like... 12 in the first book, like, he's young.
Yeah.
So, these 12-year-olds, they're just...
Getting it done.
Yeah. But I think that one's gonna be really cool, and I definitely want to read the first one before we get to this one, because...
Yeah.
I've heard the first one's really good, and I think I'm gonna like the humor and the story and the mythology and all of that.
Yeah.
Okay, for these final Rick Riordan Presents titles, we don't have firm release dates just yet, but we know that Pahua and the Dragon's Secret by Laurie M. Lee is coming out in the fall. This is the sequel to Pahua and the Soul Stealer, and in it, a girl must journey to the Land of Dragons to steal Metal Dragon, and then it's cut off, because I found the only description that I could find was from Publishers Marketplace, but it was behind a membership-only, like, paywall login screen. And I'm like, what metal dragon thing does she have to steal? Is it Festus? I doubt it's Festus.
I mean, I doubt it, but that would be hilarious.
Yeah. So, not really any clue what's going on here. But if this is really coming out in the fall, I would imagine it's going to be a month or two before we get the official synopsis. Like,
yeah.
It shouldn't be too long. We'll get a cover soon as well, so.
Yeah, and if they don't have a date for it yet, my guess is it'll be closer to end of October, beginning of November, somewhere in there.
Not September.
If they didn't, yeah, I feel like with all the other RRP September books like already being, we know about them. We've got synopsis, we've got all of that. I feel like if this was going to fit into that, they would have given us some more info by now. So I would imagine it's probably an October, November book. Mm-hmm. So.
Definitely. And the next one on the list, coming out just in 2023, no release date, is Moco Magic by Tracy Baptiste. This is about Caribbean folklore, and the only synopsis that I could really find was from the fandom website, so I'm not 100% sure where this is coming from, so take it with a grain of salt, but it says, the book follows a young Moco Jumbi, a protective spirit who walks on stilts, who is learning about her divine powers when she finds a rogue Mono Jumbi, is that? I guess that's maybe different. Which is planning to capture power during a festival in Brooklyn.
Mm.
So that's really interesting. And Tracy Baptiste is the one who has written about Jumbies before. She's got a whole bunch of, like, Jumbi books. Some of them are for real young readers. This is a middle grade book, but Caribbean folklore is interesting. This is, you know, a little bit of Daniel Jose Older's books is that Caribbean he's got folklore some of them. As well. So I would be interested to see if anything sort of, not that they take place in the same world, but like if there's crossover, like creatures or ideas or magic systems, something like that.
Right. Since his isn't exclusively Caribbean folklore, it's a part of the conglomeration of folklores that kind of make up the Ballad and Dagger series.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see if kind of cementing this in Caribbean folklore, if like things are different or if there are things that kind of relate to the others.
So, yeah. But I think Tracy is pretty cool. We follow her on Twitter, and she was the one who talked a while back about how important it is that Ariel is black in the new Little Mermaid movie, and just about black mermaids and stuff like that. And so I just think that she has nice, well-thought-out opinions, And I'm very curious to see, you know, because I haven't read any of her stuff before, what her writing is like. Yeah. I'm sure it's wonderful, though. You don't get to be a Rick Ryan Presents author with bad writing.
Right, so. You've kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of got to show your stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And the last one that I found coming out in 2023 is the Untitled Shadow Bruja number 2 book by J.C. Cervantes. This is the sequel to Lords of Night, which is about Aztec mythology. And of course, this is a spinoff of the Stormrunner series.
Why we did not read it, because we felt like there was just too much built up behind it that neither one of us had really gotten into very much.
I still feel guilty. Like, I know we can't help it, and we can't cover everything, but I'm like, she's the one person. I guess we haven't really done Rebecca either, or Sarwat. Yeah. Okay, there's a few that we haven't gotten to yet, but it's fine. We'll find time. This one is a little bit bigger, because at this point, when this comes out, there'll be 5 books. I've read the first one, but there's still a bunch of books that we have to read, so we'll get to it at some point. When we run out of Percy Jackson content.
Right?
Ha ha ha.
In another few years.
Yeah. Mm. Then we'll do these. But, yeah, I'm really excited. Do you have a favorite coming out from these?
I'm really, really looking forward to the sequel to Ballad and Dagger.
Okay.
I just really liked that book so much.
Yeah.
And it left us in a place that it's like, come on. So
yeah.
I'm very interested to get into book 2, and having it pick up right where we left off is really cool, because so many of these stories have gaps in between, and like Rick has always used those gaps to kind of do small stories, like short ones that kind of, you know, take on a life of their own. But yeah, I'm really excited to kind of pick up exactly where we left off and keep going. So I think that's probably the one I'm most excited about. There are others I'm also very excited about, but that's probably one that I'm most looking forward
to. Do I have to pick just one?
Well,
like 4.
I was going to say.
Mine's probably going to be The Spirit Glass, just because I love Rosh so much. And it's a new story. It's a new mythology for me. I'm really curious to see how this one goes. And if it's a little spooky, all the better.
I will say a quick, like, second for me is definitely Serwa.
I knew that was going
to
be
because
the
I was going to say something, but I was like, no, Karen has to pick one. You have to let Karen pick one first, and then you said Spirit Glass. I'm like, okay, now I can talk about Roseanne. Because I really, again, I love Roseanne's writing, and it was such a good, fun book that I am looking forward to getting more Serwa, too, so.
Definitely. And I think my second one's probably going to be The Last Fallen Realm, just because it's the conclusion to that series. That's always really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Gracie is such a delight, and I love all the food in that book and how she writes about it. And it really, you know, despite it being from a completely different cultural background, there's so much for me to relate to in there, and so much that I find so intriguing that I just can't help it. I love it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all of these I'm excited about for different reasons, so we'll see what we can get to on the podcast, and I'll probably try to read all of them just because I try to write reviews on Subjectify Media, so even if we don't talk about them in detail on the podcast, you could probably find a review of it on the website, and I will, when I write those, I'll always link to them, so you guys can know that they're up. Okay, so the Rick Ryan Presents authors obviously don't just write for Rick Ryan Presents. They have other projects coming out from other publishing houses throughout the year. I went a little light on this section because, you know, we want to support these authors in all of their writing.
Absolutely.
And I'm definitely going to be reading as much as I can, but we do try to keep it as focused on what comes out of Rick Ryan Presents as possible. That being said, there are a handful of books coming out next year that I particularly am looking forward to. This is not all of them. And if there are any other ones that you guys are super interested in, please let me know, because I try to stay on top of this as much as I can, but like, it's really hard keeping track of everybody's schedule. And I tried to run through some authors' like pages to look for more books, but it's like, not all of it is necessarily citated there, and then some of it's just not been announced yet, or it's just been like, oh yeah, I have a project coming up, stay tuned, and it's like,
yeah.
Do you know how hard it is to keep track of like 15 authors at this point. Like, yeah. It's pretty difficult. On top of all the other books that I like reading.
Right, exactly.
Throughout the year. So, yep. Yeah. But I have to mention a couple of them because I am really stoked for a few of these coming out. The first one is February 14th, which is the week after Winston Chu. And this is from Roshni Chokshi. Of course, I'm looking forward
which
to this
one.
Which
is also Valentine's Day.
It is Valentine's Day, which is very
I was like,
funny.
I'm not wrong, right? The 14th is Valentine's Day, right?
Yes. And this is a love story, kind of.
Question mark?
It's called The Last Tale of the Flower Bride. We've talked about it a couple of times on the podcast. This is her adult debut, so that's very exciting. So if you're on the younger side of things,
maybe hold this one.
Yeah, ask your parents, and parents, maybe don't let your child read this. It is a sumptuous, gothic-infused story about a marriage that is unraveled by dark secrets, a friendship cursed to end in tragedy, and the danger of believing in fairy tales. This sounds like it's going to be sad, yeah. And that it's not going to have a happy ending, but gothic-infused, that just, it pulls to me.
Yes, it does.
I can't not read something that's gothic-infused, especially by Roshni Chokshi. So, this one should be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Next up in March, on the 21st, we have Lucha of the Night Forest by Taylor K. Mejia. This is an edge-of-your-seat fantasy about a girl who will do anything to protect her sister, even if it means striking a dangerous bargain. Dark forces, forgotten magic, and a heart-stopping queer romance make this young adult novel a must-read. The cover for this is so beautiful, and Taylor's got a really good... It's so funny, because she always talks about how she's such a wimp that, like, even when she's writing her middle grade books, she has to, like, put them down sometimes because they're too spooky even for her to write, and yet she writes all of this, like, gothic-y, dark sort of fantasy, and... The fact that this is a young adult novel, I haven't read her other books before, even though they're quite popular... But this one, I feel like, has my name written all over it, too, so...
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. And then, maybe... See, I was gonna say, maybe the one I'm looking forward to most, but I really want to read these other two.
Right.
As well. But also coming in March, March 28th, we have Into the Light by Mark Ashiro. Of course, Mark is the one who's co-writing The Sun and the Star with Rick. And this book, I got it, like, a couple of weeks ago. The cover is stunning. It has mushrooms on it, which, of course, just immediately pulls me into it.
Yep.
And I haven't read any of Mark's other books, but I've heard so many good things about all of them. They constantly win awards. They're just around everywhere. But this one feels like something I'd be really interested in. I paraphrased this synopsis because it was a little long, so this is kind of what I gleaned from it. After being cast out from his family, Manny has survived alone in the wilderness for a year before he comes across the Varela family, whose surly son Carlos promises a new future for him. Meanwhile, Eli abides by the rules his family and secluded community sets for him, but he's hounded by a single question. Why can't he remember his past? The report of a dead body will draw these two young men into confronting their identities and who they're allowed to be. So it's definitely a queer story, and it just seems like it's going to be kind of dark, but also have, like, bigger themes and stuff like that. And just every time Mark talks about it, I'm like, oh, this just keeps sounding better and better to me.
Yeah. No, it sounds good.
Now, I know that these aren't necessarily your usual go-to genres, but is there anyone that, like, really sticks out to you?
I mean, I am very interested to see what Roshni will do with an adult book.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I like YA and middle grade as much as the next person, but there is something, there's more that you can do with adult stories.
Yeah.
Like, you're just, there's not quite as many things holding you back a little. So I am really interested to see what she'll do with the kind of no holds barred, like, uh-huh. She has, you know, nothing kind of keeping her down. And, you know, and I mean, I don't know if that one is necessarily my kind of book, but it intrigues me. The idea of it really is very interesting and crazy. Uh-huh. So, like, I'm definitely interested. We'll see how scary it is.
Yeah.
And whether or not I actually read it. But yeah. I would like to see what she does with an adult book.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I think that one, to me, would have been, like, kind of average because the, like, oh, I don't really like the stories where, like, the family has a dark secret and, like, you know, things that end in tragedy. As much as I like horror and spooky things, like, I like stuff that ends happily still. But that last line, the danger of believing in fairy tales, that really intrigues me. I really want to know what that means. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
To wrap up here, we have a couple more quick sections. I just wanted to put some stuff on here because I wanted to speculate a little bit about the announcements that we could be seeing in 2023. And of course, we have to start with Percy Jackson and the Olympians, which isn't coming to Disney Plus until 2024. But considering they will be finished filming by the end of January,
this could be an exciting year.
Yes, there is a big, big chance that we could be getting something from this. I mean, they will be probably spending the rest of 2023, or like a very large portion of 2023, doing the CGI and putting the final touches on all of the episodes. So there's still a lot of work ahead for the show, but I didn't write it on here, but I think first and foremost, I would expect a Poseidon and Zeus announcement.
Yes.
That's gotta be coming
soon. That's A number one.
Yeah.
I would assume we would get that before we get any other info about the show at this point.
Yeah.
Like, it's the last big casting announcement where they've held out this long. They're finishing filming in January, which means they have to have cast them and filmed with them by then. So
right.
I would imagine sometime in January we're going to learn who these two are.
Yeah. January or, like, February at the latest, yeah. I would imagine. It's got to come out soon. Yeah. So,
I mean, once they're near set, like, yeah, if they're recognizable at all, which is what they've seemed to have done with the gods, they, you know, with Lynn playing Hermes and a lot of identifiable faces kind of playing some of these gods,
mm-hmm.
I feel like they can't wimp out on Zeus and Poseidon. Yeah. So, like, I feel like they're going to be recognizable faces. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, if they show up on set, people are going to be like, that's got to be one of them. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, this is not the casting. But, like, if Pierce Brosnan is standing on set.
Right.
Or, you know, has been seen near set, it's going to raise flags and people are going to talk about it. So, I feel like they're probably going to want this news to come from them and not be, like, a thing that the, you know, tabloids get or that the paparazzi catch first. Right. So, I feel like we'll probably get it in January.
Yeah. And I think they've been trying to sprinkle the announcements throughout the year to keep the hype going, which has been working very well.
Oh, yeah.
But I need this information.
It's time.
Rather than later.
It's time, dang it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would also not be completely surprised if we got either, the teaser trailer we got before was still, like, pretty short, even for a teaser trailer. But I wouldn't be that surprised if we got another teaser trailer or even a full-length trailer by the end of the year, maybe a sneak peek, the opening 2 minutes of the show, something like that. Because I do feel like we could possibly expect promo from either San Diego Comic-Con or D23 again.
Yeah. I mean, we do not know. We know that the show's coming in 2024.
Right.
But we do not know whether it's going to be January or December at this point. Like, no. It could be any time in the year.
Right, yeah.
So, like, my brain likes to believe, and this could be wrong, that it's going to come earlier in 2024.
Yeah.
Like, if they've pushed it to 2024, I feel like it's not going to be a November-December release unless they really want time to promote it. Because they've got the entirety of 2023 to really hype up this show. And they've got, you know, I think you're right that we'll probably get a full-length trailer at Comic-Con. We'll probably get any sort of, like, glimpse at the monsters or, like, that sort of stuff to kind of get people really, you know, jazzed about the show, and we'll see the kids doing promo and stuff like that.
Wouldn't it be funny if they did monster announcements like they did casting announcements?
I mean,
like, here's what the Minotaur is gonna look like, and it's a whole blog post
right
on Rick's website.
I mean,
that would be
they
so
could
funny.
Definitely do it if they wanted to. Monster reveals, like,
yes.
But, I mean, I feel like we're going to get a lot of promotion in 2023 with the kids, with probably some of the gods, too. I mean, the kids are, like, the heart and soul right. of these books. So yeah. I'm sure they'll be at the forefront of most of the marketing stuff. But mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll get some stuff with the gods, too. It's going to be a big year to just hear about it.
Yeah.
And then hopefully it'll be earlier in 2024, just because that way I don't have to wait.
I know, right? I mean, part of me wants a summer release for the show because it would line up so perfectly with him being at summer
this
camp
is true.
And all that. But I don't want to wait till June. I don't know if I can wait that long.
Yeah, that's all.
So
true.
We'll see what happens there.
Yeah.
I wanted to also point out the trio's upcoming projects, because I think out of everybody, like, they're the people we're kind of keeping an eye on most. I went to their IMDb pages. I didn't look anywhere else. I just went there. Walker and Leah don't have any other upcoming projects aside from Percy Jackson in the Olympians, but Arian voices Banky in the Paramount Plus original Adventures in Wonder Park, which is based on the 2019 Wonder Park movie. I never watched that. Did you see that?
No, okay. But I know what it, like, I can see
yeah,
it in my
head.
Yeah,
I remember seeing the trailers for it and being like, oh, that looks kind of cute, but I just never got around to it.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to be a main character because he's in 11 out of the 12 episodes, and I think it's supposed to release on January 31st, so that's coming out pretty soon.
That's
I think
fun.
It's really cool that he's voice acting.
Yeah.
I love when actors do that, and that's something easy that, you know, you can support him in, and hopefully we'll remember when it comes out and we'll remind you guys again. But
yeah.
As of right now, Arian is the only one who has something else coming out in 2023.
Yeah. And I'm sure if that changes, we will hear about it.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if the other two get at least maybe a quick film or something that they can film, like, after they're done wrapping Percy Jackson, between when the next season starts. Because I do feel like, I don't want to speculate that we're going to get a season 2 green light, like, super soon or anything like that, but they're probably contracted for multiple seasons regardless.
Yeah.
But I also wonder if, you know, they don't want to hold these kids back.
No.
So they're probably going to want to schedule a season 2
yeah.
well, at some point.
They also know that they're going to age quicker than the show, you know, like, the show takes time to produce. So by not releasing the first season until 2024, if they're going to continue and do more than one season or two seasons, they know they're going to have to keep it moving forward.
Right.
So, like, I feel like if we are waiting, like, I would not be shocked if in 2023, before the first season even releases, we get a season 2 green light.
Yeah.
Because I can see Disney looking at what's coming out, looking at the episodes and saying, yeah, this is
going
to be huge.
Like, seeing, like, somewhat of a finished project and
right.
going, yeah, we like this.
Right. And, like, seeing the fervor and the fans really excited for it. And if we get stuff at SDCC and it gets a big response, or D23... like, yeah, I feel like it's going to just supercharge it, and I would not be surprised if they're working, you know, season 2 starts to be pulled together so that they can shoot it in 2024
right.
before the kids start to age too much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they're well aware that, like, they can't put it off for too long. Like, I don't think Disney's going to be dragging their feet on this. It's going to be a make or break. Like, we got a decision to make. Let's do it. Let's go.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Let's hope so. I also wanted to talk about The King Chronicles coming to Netflix. We know that it's not coming out next year because Becky had that tweet about, you know, pretty much not expecting it in 2023.
Yeah.
They're still working on the script, but I would imagine the script will be finished next year.
Yeah.
I would be a little worried if, you know, I know it takes a long time, but it's already taken a while. This went into, like, pre-production back in 2019, so
yeah.
It's been a minute already.
Well, and if you think about the things that Rick probably has on his plate that he's working on these days, like, Son and the Star is done, it's written, the arcs have gone out, like,
right.
There may be little things, like blurbs and things they need to do for the actual book, but other than that, Son and the Star is ready to go. We know he's still probably working on Chalice of the Gods, but I would imagine the majority of it is probably written by now.
Yeah, I would imagine, because a lot of times those, like, big production books, they are done well in advance
yeah.
of the release.
Like,
date.
It takes a bit to
yeah.
kind of, yeah. So I would imagine most of that, if not all of that, is probably written. So if the show is finishing up filming and they're going to start working on scripts, the other thing that I would imagine is finishing up Kane Chronicles scripts, getting Daughter of the Deep script completely finished, like that sort of thing, kind of like wrapping all of that up so that he can dive full, you know, full speed into season two of Percy.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'd imagine they'll probably get the script finished in the early months of 2023. Mm-hmm. And then, who knows, because Netflix likes to just drop things on us. Right. We'll find out when, you know, if there's any sort of casting announcement or, you know,
I feel like here's a movie at the beginning of 2024. Is going to come from Rick and not, like, Netflix official accounts. But I wouldn't be surprised, because we don't have a director for the movie, right?
I don't believe so. I think it, because it's still being written, I don't think they've attached anybody yet.
So I would imagine we could, there. I feel like there's a strong chance we could get a director announcement next year as well. Maybe some leads. Maybe.
I feel like they
have the end of the year.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like they have to kind of cast this. They have to keep it moving forward.
Right.
Because, you know, if people forget about it, if it kind of falls off, then, you know, you're not writing. Plus, I think Netflix will see the Disney of it all, the Percy and all of that kind of getting pulled together and, you know, ready to go for the Percy series in 2024. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they'll be like, yeah, we want to ride that wave with it. And,
I totally agree.
And so they'll start getting announcements, you know, leads, cast, directors, that sort of thing. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, and I think once the leads are cast, then we could possibly get a tentative release date, if only, like, this is coming in 2025, you know?
Yeah.
Which I would still be okay with, because at least we know what we're shooting for.
Yeah.
I kind of don't think that this movie's going to come out in 2024. That just feels soon, but you never know.
It would depend on, like, end of the year stuff. Like, I could see it being a late 2024 release, like a December release on Netflix.
We're getting 8 hours of Percy Jackson and the Olympians. This is going to be 2-ish hours, so it won't take as long to film either.
Right. And, I mean, there will still be, I'm sure, just as many special effects and all of that.
Right.
But if it's not, it's not as lengthy of an endeavor as the first season of Percy. So, yeah, I could see it being a late 2023 release, but also possibilities of any time in 2024, really, too.
Yeah. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about is us.
Us?
What do we got going on in 2023?
Hmm.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
To be honest.
We truly have no idea.
Yeah. But some things that we are hoping to accomplish or get to do is, you know, I would love to go back to San Diego Comic-Con next year. We'll see if that happens.
Especially if there are Percy-related announcements coming. Because that, I mean, Disney with D23 likes to do their own, but they still send stuff to SDCC for big announcements as well. Like, Marvel stuff was announced there last year with, and they had all this stuff with, like, Natalie Portman when they did Thor, and that was at SDCC. So, like, they still love to use San Diego as a major launching point, too. So it could be either one of them, but yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah. I would also love to go to D23. I've never been there before.
It doesn't look
like getting in is any harder with a press pass than it is with, you know, like, is it WonderCon or, WonderCon or San Diego or anything like that. It's a very similar process, so maybe we'll get a chance. It's a lot of flying to California for me, but, we'll see what happens.
Those are not short flights.
No, they're not. And it's just, you know, when you have anxiety and especially social anxiety, those situations are very tough, but it's worth it for Percy Jackson. So we'll see what we can do. And, you know, see if we can bring some exclusives to you guys. That's always the
dream. I mean, that would be fun.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But speaking of, interviews with as many of the Rick Ryan Presents authors as we can. You know, I think we did pretty well in 2022.
We did.
A handful on, and there were some really great, you know, some great exclusive information. All of them went very smoothly, and it was just a lot of fun to be able to talk to them. And having Roseanne on again, separate from her book release, to talk about Percy Jackson specifically, that is, like, very high on my list.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're hoping that will be something sooner rather than later, you know, because she does have a book coming out at the end of the year, too.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, maybe we get a double dose of Roseanne.
Does she want to talk to us? How many times is too many times?
A double dose of Roseanne in 2023 would be fabulous. I mean, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, we're not going to complain for that. So the other big thing that is that we do know about that is coming this year is that we will be starting The Red Pyramid, which is Kane Chronicles number one.
And for those following along, Kristen has not read the Kane Chronicles. And Karen has.
I've only read the first two. Okay. And I've only read them one time.
Okay.
So I don't remember anything.
Yeah.
So this is going to be very excited.
Fun. This is going to be a lot of fun.
This is going to be new for us, and I think it's going to add a lot to the podcast because we won't know what's going to happen next, and I feel like the speculation is going to be really fun. Because there were a few times where we had to bite our tongue, like about Selena and all of that. Like, you know, we tried not to say it out loud, but we knew what was coming. And
for every time where we really don't remember, like, what's his face? The scary dude who had Mrs. O'Leary.
Daedalus?
Daedalus. Yeah. No. The
scary dude.
Well, the guy who was at camp. Like, he had a name.
But Daedalus.
It was Daedalus. Yeah. But, like, yeah. We legitimately didn't remember this guy. Yeah. We were like, I don't remember why he's important, but we'll get there. I'm sure we'll remember later. Yeah. For every one of those. Yeah, but it'll be really fun to do a series I have not read.
Yeah.
And one that is not super familiar to you either, so.
And the other Riordan-verse podcasters love Kane Chronicles. Like, they really think that it's a very strong, underappreciated series.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested in revisiting it and kind of seeing it from a different point of view. I should take this moment to admit that I have lied to all of you. Uh-oh. And I would like to apologize because I thought there were 20 chapters in The Last Olympian. There are not. There are 23 chapters.
Yeah.
Because I was like, how are we going to finish this book in 3 chapters? This doesn't make sense. There's more than 3 chapters left. So we won't be starting The Red Pyramid until February-ish.
Yeah, somewhere.
Sometime in February. But when we get into that, it's going to be very exciting. We'll be kind of switching over to Egyptian mythology and exploring more of that because we're less familiar with it, so it'll be a great learning experience. But we will always have Percy Jackson at the forefront and Greek mythology at the forefront, and we'll probably end up switching back and forth and doing multiple things.
I mean, with the show and with following Rick and all of the announcements and things that come from him and Becky, like, there will be no shortage of Percy talk, I'm sure, over the next year or two as we get into Kane Chronicles. But, yeah, we are very interested in kind of doing some of the same things we did with the first series of Percy books, where we got into the gods, we did, you know, deep dives on different gods, we did deep dives on the monsters and kind of looking into where, you know, how they fit into mythology in general, as well as, like, the actual series. So we'll probably do some of that for the Kane Chronicles and Egyptian mythology, too.
Yeah, that'll be sure. Fun. And another thing that I kind of have planned for this year is I would really like to interview non-Rick Riordan Presents authors who write about mythology. There's one in particular who has written a bunch of books, YA books, I believe, about Greek mythology, and she has a book coming out this year about Medusa, and we're going to read it and discuss it with her. And it's not necessarily, like, we're going to talk about her book, obviously, but it's also going to be about the myth of Medusa, and I just want to bring, like, that sort of other dynamic to the podcast where we're learning about Greek mythology and getting to talk to people. She's a classicist, too, so, like, she knows this stuff. Like, she knows Greek mythology. And I feel like that's something really unique that we, as book reviewers, can bring to the podcast for you guys. So hopefully you enjoy it. Hopefully it'll be a good departure from some of our normal stuff. But we'll let you know when that's happening.
Yeah.
And then, as always, more guests. Yeah. We haven't had as many guests on the show as I thought we would, but I feel like we just have so much to talk about already that I'm kind of okay with that. But when we can bring on somebody else, we'll definitely try.
I mean, obviously, we've had a lot of fun with the guests we've had, especially, like, most recently, Sarah was a blast. And I know we'd love to do some more kind of things like that as topics come up that we're like, hey, you know, like, we could definitely do an episode about this. Let's see if, you know, we can get somebody on. But I know Karen and I both dream and hope and pray that we could get some show cast members, some show production people at some point. Like, those are definitely, like, dream guests for us. even if it's like the costume designer.
Right. I would
like,
love
it would be
that.
Fascinating to talk yeah. to them about how that all came to be, or like the, you know, the people that do the soundtrack or the, you know, the score or stuff like mm-hmm. that. You know, we're very open and very excited to maybe hopefully get in touch with some of those people and see if we can have them on. So
yeah,
that may be a 2 years from now thing, but right. you know, it could also fit into next year if they're looking to do promo too. So yeah. you never know.
Definitely.
Yeah. I know.
It's a
sickness. We have a problem.
But we laid out a lot of stuff for you guys. You can know what's coming up in the fandom, know what's coming up for Rick Riordan Presents, and know what we're trying to do in 2023. I hope that gets you guys excited, and I hope you'll stick with us for yeah. the next year / 26 years.
If that's too long of a commitment, at least stick with us through the rest of Last Olympian.
Yeah.
Because today we're talking about Chapter 18.
Yeah, that was an excellent transition.
I thought you might
that
like
that. That was very good. Gold star for you.
I thought you might enjoy that. Yeah, today we're talking about Chapter 18, which is entitled My Parents Go Commando. That has all their connotations.
When I read that, I was like, what is going to happen?
Like, I see what Rick meant by yeah. it, but at the same time, my brain is like, broken.
Before I knew, I was like, this could get weird.
Yeah. But anyway. Campers and hunters are wounded by the time Percy and company get to street level. Clarice is frozen in a block of ice, too. Stupid Hyperborean giants. The Titan army has the building surrounded, and Ethan Nakamura, Dracaene, and a pair of Hyperboreans can be seen right in front, led by Lou Kronos with scythe in hand. The only thing keeping them from marching straight into the Empire State Building is Chiron, and the single arrow he has notched and aimed right at Lou Kronos' face. Chiron looses the arrow, dissolving the Dracaene queen on the spot. Out of arrows, Chiron draws his sword and squares to meet his father. Lou Kronos taunts Chiron. Chiron retaliates by reminding Lou Kronos that Luke was a hero until Kronos got in his head. Lou Kronos yells back at Chiron, but definitely uses pronouns, revealing Luke is still present in that body. Chiron points this out, then attacks while Kronos is confused. Lou Kronos is just fast enough to lash out and throw Chiron into a building. Annabeth runs to help, and Percy and Talia move rubble, but they can't get to him. Annabeth lashes out at Kronos, but her knife bounces off, probably dislocating her shoulder. Just as Percy is about to defend from Kronos' scythe strike, a howl is heard behind the Titan army. Percy calls out for Mrs. O'Leary. A path forms in the Titan army as Mrs. O'Leary and Nico make their way toward Percy. Nico clearly scares their army as they give him quite a wide berth. Nico then mentions to Kronos that he would love to see his death, to which Kronos replies that he's not mortal and cannot die. To that, Nico stabs his 3-foot-long Stygian iron sword into the ground, summoning an army of the dead from cracks in the ground. Suddenly, Hades is in his chariot, galloping down Fifth Avenue with Persephone and Demeter in tow. Hades tells Kronos that he's here to fight against him, drawing his sword. Kronos strikes the ground with his scythe, and it forms a barrier around the Empire State Building, allowing the humans outside the barrier to return to their lives, even if that means they're seeing terrible things as the mist tries to hide the monsters' bodies and generally scary things from them. Sally and Paul wake up. She looks directly at Percy through the mist, whispers to Paul, then charges directly toward Percy. Kronos commands his forces to attack, and they do, the dead fighting alongside Olympus's forces. Kronos and Ethan sneak into the Empire State Building lobby, and he commands the giants to take care of the remaining demigods. Percy battles a giant while Nico tries to make his way toward Sally and Paul. Paul picks up a sword and wastes a Dracaene, thanks to his Shakespearean sword training. Sally is momentarily in trouble, but she whips a shotgun out of a nearby police car and blasts the Hyperborean giant that was trying to take her out. Nico reminds Percy that he needs to go after Kronos. Percy then asks Mrs. O'Leary to help find Chiron, while Annabeth, he, Talia, and Grover race for the elevator.
This chapter was short, but I still really liked it. Like, it was still yeah. very dynamic.
Well, these chapters are also, I will say both of them, are quite hard to summarize, because there's so much that happens in the little moments. Like, you've got this whole interplay with Kronos and Chiron, and, like, they're not even really saying anything, but there's a lot happening.
And it's important.
Right, like, yeah. So it was really hard to kind of summarize what's going on here. So hopefully we'll hit on everything in our discussion, so you won't be like, wait, what was she talking about?
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
A random thing I wanted to mention, though, was Clarice being frozen in the block of ice, because I feel like she would die.
I would imagine a normal mortal would die. A demigod probably can survive. Maybe
not. Yeah, and, like, I didn't know if the blessing of Ares was still, like, keeping her alive or something, but...
I mean, I imagine when Ares talks about, like, his eyes, it's always, like, they're red and glowing, like, they're warm and hot. So I imagine, like, anger and frustration and that sort of thing that is kind of, like, the Ares bread and butter emotions. Yeah. Like, maybe that'll keep her warm in her maybe. Heart. I don't know. It's very... It's very interesting, for sure.
That's funny.
Okay, so I would say the first major thing here is this Chiron-Lucronos standoff.
Yeah.
Percy and them run down the stairs, and they come across this. Chiron is the only thing keeping Kronos from just walking into the building, and it's a single arrow is all he's got left. And it just, this whole situation with the... You've always been a teacher, son, not a fighter. Like,
right.
Oh, it has so much, there's so much tension and so much history in this silence.
Yeah. Yeah, you can feel the weight.
Yeah.
Of what is happening, even before they're talking. Like, when they come out to see that Chiron is standing between them and Kronos, it's like, wow, this is something.
And Annabeth, like, whispers, like, Chiron. Like,
yeah.
Trying to get his attention, like, let him know they're there, but, like, you know, what can they do? He's doing as much as he possibly can, right. But, like, what can they do even? Yeah. So, Chiron kind of pokes at Kronos to hopefully, like, you know, get him to react so that he can make a move. Like, this standoff is not going to benefit Chiron because Kronos is the more powerful being, so, like, he could just wipe him out at any moment. But if he can get Kronos distracted a little... maybe it'll work. So, yeah, Chiron kind of, you know, throws barbs at Kronos and says, like, Luke was a hero before you turned him. And when Kronos responds, and responds as if he's Luke and says, like, you told me the gods, you know, would care about me or should care about, I don't know, something like that. Like, he clearly, Luke still has some sort of a foothold.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing to come out of this, is, like, we've kind of been under the impression that Luke has very little power. He's still not dead, but, like, he has very little power in this equation. Kronos has overpowered his body and has taken right. his mind over. So to hear things kind of come from Luke's perspective here is massive.
Yeah.
And, of course, this doesn't end well for Chiron, because in this confrontation, he does get a hit in on Kronos, but... Kronos is able to kind of throw him to the side, and he gets buried under rubble really quickly.
Yeah, I knew Chiron was in later books, so I wasn't super worried about, like, the fact that he was dead. But I did actually believe that he was dead until the end of the chapter when Percy has Mrs. O'Leary look for him. Because he specifically says, like, we couldn't find him, which to me implies that he turned to dust. And I figured Zeus would just bring him back or something later.
Yeah.
But, like, I thought he was dead.
Yeah. Like, I mean... there's a lot of rubble, and it's heavy, and Talia and Percy are moving it as fast as they can, but, like, I guess it makes some sense that they couldn't find him, but, like, he could have been monster dust. Like,
yeah.
He could have just been gone.
Yeah.
So, yeah. After that, Annabeth kind of loses her mind seeing Chiron die or disappear. You know, Annabeth loses a bit of control, and she charges at Kronos. It's kind of, like, it's a moment of what you can only imagine is pure anger. She has... no sense. Nothing is going to talk her out of this. And she goes to stab Kronos, and her blade bounces off of his chest. So
it really messes her up.
Like, yeah.
Really hurts her shoulder.
Yeah, like throws her shoulder either out of socket or just, you know, out of balance in some respect. And so Percy kind of protects her, like, as best he can once she falls backwards. But, like, this whole little... It kind of... is a little bit of foreshadowing for the Annabeth we're going to see in the next chapter and a half. Like, as we finish this one into the next, she does not shy away from getting into the fight in this in these two chapters.
Yeah, and what I found really interesting about this scene in particular was that Luke wanted to spare Annabeth, but Kronos said no.
Yeah.
And that just goes to show you that, like, as heartless as Luke has been throughout these last five books, it's not like he doesn't care about anybody. Like, he still cares about Annabeth.
He's just so frustrated with his dad and the other gods that he has lost sight of how much he does care about everybody. Like, he, you know, he and Percy have kind of become, you know, rivals or whatever, but I think he still even cares about Percy. You know, it's not like he wants to see all of them dead. It's not, that's not his goal here.
He just wants a new world order.
Yeah. Which does not necessarily come from Kronos. You're going to get a new world order, but it's not going to be
not
order.
The one you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
New world chaos.
So, in the last chapter, Percy sent Mrs. O'Leary away with a message, and we didn't know who to. Well, just when they need them the most, we hear a little howl in the distance behind the Titan army, and Percy yells, "Mrs. O'Leary?" And here she comes, trotting with, I can just imagine, like, her just kind of, like, trotting down the
walkway. Fluffy tail going.
And, like, the army just parts for them because it's, Nico just has this energy that radiates off of him that's like, I'm a bad dude, you want to stay away from me.
This part is possibly my favorite scene in the series.
I mean, I get it.
Because it is so visual. It is so cinematic. It is so iconic. I love Nico so much. Bonus points for Mrs. O'Leary being by his side.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, you've got him in a skull helmet. It's a little, how old is he now? 12, I think?
Yeah, it's
somewhere
gotta be
like
close.
That. This little boy in a skull helmet parting the monsters of Kronos' army because he radiates death, just strolling up Fifth Avenue. Like, Kronos is a nobody, and he's not even afraid of him.
Yeah.
And it's just like, when we get to this part in the show, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah.
It's gonna be so awesome.
Yeah. No, it really is, like, one of the... there's no doing it justice when you're, like, trying to summarize what's going on. Because, again, it's one of those things where there's no words. There's not even anything really happening. It's Nico slow walking through this army, and none of them want to touch him.
Yeah.
They're all just like, whoa.
Kronos actually has to tell them, like, stand your ground, because they all want to run away from this little boy.
Yeah. Who, the minute he starts talking, looks Kronos in the face and is like, I'd like to see you dead.
Yeah, exactly. And the timing is so perfect, too, because we, at this point, like, I thought Chiron was dead.
Yep.
And there's literally nothing standing between Percy and Kronos and Kronos and Olympus.
Yep.
Annabeth is hurt. What are they going to do? This whole army is out there. He specifically says, like, hunters are gone and the party ponies are gone and everything just all seems lost.
Yeah.
And then you get the little howl from Mrs. O'Leary, and you get Nico walking up Fifth Ave, and it's just, the timing is so perfect.
Yeah, and pretty soon after he takes his place, you know, near Percy, by Percy's side here, he and Kronos have a little exchange where they're taunting each other quickly.
Yeah.
And then Nico takes his 3-foot Stygian iron blade and just stabs the ground, and suddenly there's all these little fissures, and there's these zombie dead people coming up out of the ground, grabbing at the monsters, and that's when they start to run away. They're like, nope, like, I don't want anything to do with an army of the dead, are you nuts? And Kronos is like, stand your ground, dudes, because, you know, we're fighting, this is, you know. And it's moments like this where you start to, like, they felt outnumbered the entire time, and things are not going well, even with Nico and all of his power here. Like, it's still not, like, a foregone conclusion, but it feels so much more evenly matched when you have an army of the dead.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
It's just like Lord of the Rings when Aragorn summons the army of the dead, like, to defend them, and it's the only reason that they are not just wiped out.
Right.
It's that same feeling. It's like, having control over the dead and using, you know, I know that Nico communes with the dead, so it's not just like he's like forcing them to do this. Mm-hmm. They are fighting on behalf of Nico and Hades and, you know, all of the dead. So like feeling that power come forward is just insane.
Yeah. I love it.
Okay, so, you know, as if that's not enough, Nico arrives and brings his army with him, and then Hades just drops his chariot on Fifth Avenue and is like, hey guys, how's it going? With Demeter and Persephone hanging out behind him in the chariot, just like showing up to show Kronos who's boss.
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting because I did not expect either one of them to show up because, historically speaking, they're not necessarily fighters in the same way that the other gods are, but their powers are very useful. It says in the book that Demeter turns a legion into a wheat field, which is pretty funny, and Persephone turns swords into sunflowers, and I'm like, yeah, you take their weapons away, you know, they might still have their claws and stuff like that, but they're going to be a lot easier to defeat. So it was really cool that he brought them along with him. And of course, Demeter, too, is also an Olympian god. Like, yeah. She's a major goddess, so... Yeah.
Not usually a fighter, not who you think about as a fighter, right. But she's got skills.
Still capable.
Yeah, definitely. So Hades is taking Olympus' side. He's finally chosen a side. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, waging into the fight. And so they kind of do battle. And in this moment, Kronos reduces the size of the time spell. Like, he kind of takes Morpheus's spell that has taken over Manhattan and pulls it in so that it's now a small perimeter around the Empire State Building that is affected by the spell. Other than that, everyone wakes up, which, of course, means that Paul and Sally, who are just a block and a half away in their car that we just saw, wake up. And, of course, Sally can see through the mist. And the moment that Percy realizes this is another one of those tiny moments that, like, Percy realizes, my mom can see me. Paul can't because, or at least not at first, because he can't see through the mist. But Sally can see him, and she whispers to Paul, and they just come charging through. And, like, the panic in my head as I'm reading this, like, I'm with Percy, because Percy's like, no, like, I can't tell them no, I can't shout stay where you are, because Kronos is going to see them and know that he can use that against Percy. So, like, he can't do anything. He has to just kind of start fighting and hope he can get there in time, but it's chaos.
Yeah.
And then Nico is, like, trying to get to Paul and Sally first. Yeah. Like, he has seen what's going on. There isn't even a moment. It's not like Percy and Nico make eye contact or anything. It's like Nico sees what's going on and is like, yeah. Because Percy can't get away. He's literally, you know, he's got giants in front of him trying to take him out. So Nico kind of sneaks off to do as much as he can. And before Nico can really even get to them, Paul and Sally prove that they are worth their weight in gold.
Yeah. It's funny, just going back real quick to what you were saying before, I was also very worried. I know they're going to be okay. I know Sally and Paul survive.
Oh, yeah.
We see them again. But, like, in that moment, I was really scared for them. And I think that's a testament to Rick's writing that, like, you know, even when you know everything's going to be okay, you panic because you're in Percy's head.
Oh, yeah.
You know that this could end very badly.
Oh, yeah. So Paul, with his Shakespearean sword training, picks up a sword and just stabs something. And he looks at Percy, who he apparently can see, because my guess is they've made it through the barrier of that, you know, the spell. So, like, he looks at Percy and is like, I hope that was a monster I just killed.
Yeah.
And Percy's like, thanks, Paul. Like, he doesn't really know how to respond.
Yeah.
And his mom is, like, bent over trying to get something out of a police car, and suddenly there's a Hyperborean giant right behind her, like, ready to take her out. And Percy's, like, freaking out, and his mom just pulls a shotgun out of the car and explodes this giant and forces, you know, he gets blown backwards. And it's just so funny to see Paul and Sally, A, get involved in this battle, but B, like, find ways to hold their own. Like, they may not be making much progress by, like, you know, reducing the army, but, like, they can at least protect themselves. Yeah. They're not helpless.
Yeah.
And I love that.
I love that, too, because this isn't their world. As much as it's Percy's world, even Sally is very removed from it in a lot of ways. But they're still there, they're still fighting, and Sally's always been really good at trusting Percy to be a demigod and to take care of himself and knowing that he can't she can't really stop what's going to happen to him. But I just, that, especially that moment with the shotgun where he was like, when did you learn how to do that? She's like, 2 seconds ago. Like, I just figured it out.
You pull the trigger, Percy. Yeah. It's not sword fighting. Come on.
So, yeah, I thought that moment was really cool. And again, man, I love Paul.
Yeah.
He's so great.
He's, yeah. Them casting Paul is going to be a lot of fun.
It is, yeah.
Like, I can't wait.
I can't wait to see him.
Okay, so while all of this is going on, Kronos, grabs Ethan Nakamura, and they sneak into the Empire State. It's not really a sneak. He kind of says, come with me.
Yeah.
And they walk into the Empire State Building, and he is given the giants the task of killing the demigods. So, obviously, Percy and them need to follow Kronos, but, like, it's hard to just abandon Nico and your mom and your dad, who are down there fighting. Yeah. Like, it's hard to just want to do that. But ultimately, Nico says, like, we've got this. Like, mm-hmm. my dad's here, I'm here, our army is here, go. Like, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
So then our demigods basically make their way upstairs.
Yeah. What I found really interesting was Kronos specifically wants Ethan Nakamura to attend him into Mount Olympus. And Ethan was a part of his vanguard. I'm pretty sure he was probably the only demigod to be a part of Kronos' vanguard. Why is he so important? Is it just because he was the one that ultimately brought Kronos back to life? Or, like, is there another reason? Why are we keeping Ethan so close?
I have a feeling it's... I mean, when it comes to monsters and that sort of thing, I always imagine that, A, it's good to have an actual, like, human.
Yeah.
Because you never know when that's going to come in handy. So I have a feeling Kronos said, like, I don't know when I could use him, but I want him near because he's not a monster. I also think that his association with Percy is attractive to Kronos, mm-hmm. because it's like, they've got history, but Ethan keeps choosing Kronos. He keeps choosing this side.
Right.
So I feel like Kronos probably thinks, like, he's gonna, at the very least, he can probably get rid of that Percy kid for me. Like,
yeah.
Like, even, you know, in all of the other things going on, but I feel like that's...
That's true, and we can save this for the next chapter, and yeah. I don't think I would have made this connection having read it separately, but since we just did it back-to-back... I think I know why, actually, and
okay.
we get to it in the next chapter, so
okay. we'll
remind me when we talk about Ethan.
Sounds good. Yeah, so Percy, Annabeth, Talia, and Grover head upstairs. Before they leave, Percy does address Mrs. O'Leary and mm-hmm. says, Chiron is buried in that rubble, and you're the only one who can save him, and she kind of, you know, barks and runs off, and
yeah.
so hopefully Chiron is going to be found by Mrs. O'Leary, but we leave that in her capable puppy paws.
Paws, yeah.
And then Nico, yeah, is keeping the army at bay with the army of the dead, and him and Hades and Demeter and Persephone are fighting down there, so... That's where we leave this chapter, and we'll do our favorite moments and our favorite quotes really quick here. I will let Karen go first for favorite quotes.
Okay, mine's, everything's Nico-related, just so you guys know going into this. It's when he first shows up and he goes, got your message. Is it too late to join the party? Nico is not one for jokes, but this was hilarious. This was like Nico at his happiest.
Right? Like, hey guys.
Leading an army of the dead against the Titan Kronos.
Just me and my army of the dead, and here's my dad, and we're going to do some fighting. Yeah.
Let's party.
He's so funny. I love him. Okay. Yeah, mine was from Paul Blofus, and it's, I hope that was a monster I just killed. I was a Shakespearean actor in college. Picked up a little sword play. I love Paul and all of his pure humanness.
Great.
Okay, and then our favorite moments, we kind of talked about mine, but it's Sally blasting a giant with a shotgun. Yeah. I don't know how that's not a moment we have not, like, latched onto, because it's so powerful, and it's Sally taking care of Sally. Like, she doesn't need her demigod son to save her. Like,
yeah.
she's perfectly capable of taking on this giant.
I'm saying this now. We need more fan art from this battle. There's a lot of iconic moments that I don't think I've seen in the fan art all that much.
Yeah, there's so many.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
It's fair that people want to draw the demigods happy. I get that. But
yeah.
Let's also draw them in the middle of battle.
Especially because I'm sure you'd like to see your favorite moment.
Yes, we also talked about mine. It's just Nico arriving on scene. I need artwork of this. I'm sure it's out there because it's so iconic. But, like, wow. I just, yeah, I loved it.
Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. If you like revisiting your favorite canceled and cult classic shows, consider tuning into Rewatchable for in-depth discussions about Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, and Angel, and many more. We also have Not About the Weather, which is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. Lastly, we also have Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which has previously discussed every episode of the show, contains exclusive interviews, and will be covering the upcoming Teen Wolf movie. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews really help others to find us, and that is always awesome. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas for episodes or content you want to hear from us in any of these places, and we will definitely take it into consideration. We do have some feedback this week. I'm going to throw it back to Karen to see what Just a Positive Guy has for us.
Yes. At A Positive Guy 19, I asked everybody what they're looking forward to most in 2023, and he says Sarah Boateng's Guide to Witchcraft and Mayhem or Fury of the Dragon Goddess. Both excellent choices. Both on our list, yeah. Yes, definitely. And then Phoebe at Green Schwerp also said The Sun and the Star, obviously, because that one's got to be at the top of, like, everybody's lists.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, you read moments like this from Nico in this chapter, and it's like, yeah, I really need more of that.
I do need more of that.
Okay, so next week, / next episode, / the one we're recording in 5 minutes, we're going to be talking about the Lightning Thief Illustrated Edition, / the graphic novel. They are two separate things, but we figured they kind of fulfill the same needs, so we're going to look at both and talk about both at the same time. So if that is something you want to read before you listen to the episode, you've got a little time. But yeah, that'll be fun. And until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.